What have bees and gladiators got in common? Well, Boris Baer has been looking at their breeding habits, and it turns out the bee sperm actually fight it out amongst themselves to determine who's going to father the next generation.
Reproduction in honeybees starts very often when the colony gets fed up with the queen and they execute her, chuck her into bits and pieces and throw her out of the colony. And they then use the last eggs which she has laid before and they start to breed new virgin queens. And when they hatch, they're normally separated for a while until everybody has hatched, and then they start to fight against each other until one or very few are left. And these queens then leave the colony for what we call a mating flight, and they go high up in the air, they release a pheromone, a substance that attracts males. And the males are coming in large numbers. The ratio between virgin queens and males is really extraordinary. In honeybees, about 16,000 males and one female. And they all queue up behind her, forming what we call a comet. So they basically queue up for copulations. And a female then kind of copulates with about 200 of them, or up to 200 of them. She kind of basically just collects ejaculates. She goes back into the colony and then she sorts these ejaculates out, but only very few, about 5% of the sperm that she accumulates during her mating flight will ultimately be stored.
So does she then use that sperm that she selects for the rest of her life? Because queens can live a long time, can't they? Years.
Yes, in honeybees they can live up to 7 years. In other social insects which we work with, they can live for decades. So we know that, for example, the ants, which we use for comparative studies, they can live for about 20 years. And they only mate very early in their life. Once they have laid the first egg, once they have initiated a new colony, they will never go out and mate again. And this has very dramatic consequences on the female because they have to store immense amounts of sperm, millions and millions. They have to keep that alive for all that time, and they have to use it very prudently throughout their lives to fertilize eggs. And it's quite fascinating how can queens do this so efficiently.
So are you any closer to understanding then how they sort out this sperm? How do they decide of all these hundreds of matings, I want that sperm and I'm going to use it in whatever order, I'm going to flick out that sperm, I don't want that. How do they do that?
I think we start to get first insights into this. The male does not only transfer sperm to the female, the male also transfers a secretion, which we call seminal fluid or seminal plasma. And that seminal fluid consists of proteins. And when we looked at these proteins, we saw that they could be involved in little warfares between the ejaculates, but also between the males and the females. And we tested that in honeybees, and what we actually find is that some of these proteins seem to be able to recognize non-owned sperm and kill that sperm off within the female sexual tract. In the ants, where we kind of replicated that work, we could also kind of study the female side on this, and in these ants we found that the female secretions can actually cancel out that little warfare. How you can imagine this happens is that you have a picture in front of you of a gladiator in an arena. So the ejaculates then enter that arena, which is provided by the female, it's a sexual tract, and they fight against each other. We think the weaponry which they use are these proteins. And then you have losers, you have winners, but up there, the spectators, they will be the females, and they make, like in the old Rome, they make this really famous sign, thumbs up or thumbs down. So they ultimately decide who will kind of win, who will father offspring, and who will be chucked out.
And do we understand what the nature of that biological warfare is, what those proteins are doing and how they're recognising, this is my sperm, that's a competing sperm, you're dead, my ones are going to survive?
That's actually what we have just started working on. We don't know yet what the specific proteins are or what the recognition process is. What we tried from our list to do is to kind of identify those proteins that are there, to then kind of test them specifically, whether they are responsible for that effect or not. And initially it sounds a bit kind of weird that like a liquid can recognize own from non-own, or a simple cell like sperm cell would be able to do this. But there were like a couple of studies that have been published over the recent months actually that all indicate that is actually something that should be there. There was a similar study that was performed in mice a couple of weeks ago where it was found that sperm in mice is also able to recognize own sperm from non-owned sperm. So they basically align themselves, they kind of cluster together, but only those from the same male will form that alignment.
And understanding how this works, presumably this is going to inform better bee conservation and bee breeding strategies.
Yes, that's one of the ideas which we have, that deeper knowledge about bee breeding, bee reproduction will help also the bee industry to kind of breed better bees and to kind of ship semen samples around for artificial insemination programs. And we have like an artificial insemination lab here, so we're actually involved in breeding of more bees or bees of better quality.
So you're effectively creating a bee sperm bank?
Yes, to a certain degree. The advantage of the bee sperm is that you can keep it in a glass vial for a very long time. It survives there for a couple of months without help and at room temperature. So if you, for example, you need a lineage which has an increased tolerance or resistance against the parasite, and that's at the moment a big issue, then you can, instead of importing bees, which is always risky, you can import semen. For some of the more kind of dangerous diseases that travel around the world in the bees, like the varroa mite or the hive beetle, we know that's not present in semen. So we have a lower risk that we import something which we don't want to have here.
Bee biologist Boris Baer. He's from the University of Western Australia.